Now, if I made a decision in step three to let God direct my thinking, and I've got that many resentments, then those resentments are directing my thinking and God can't. It's just that simple. So I learned something very valuable just by filling out column one. In Bill's case, he said, Mr. Brown, Mrs. Jones, my employer, and my wife. He probably had more resentments than that. I just assume he didn't want to take up any more space in the big book. I used page after page after page to make that list. Now let's look at the second instruction.
He said we ask ourselves why we were angry, period. Stop right there. Go to the second column. Now why is he angry at Mr. Brown? Well, his attention to my wife. He told my wife of my mistress. Brown may get my job at the office. I don't know Mr. Brown very well, but I'm already mad at him myself. Why is he mad at Miss Jones? Well, she's a nut. She snubbed me. She committed her husband for drinking. He's my friend, and she's a gossip. Put my best friend in a nut house. I'm mad at her, too. Why is he mad at his employer? Well, his employer is unjust, unreasonable, unjust, overbearing.
Won't you come on Monday?
Yeah. We'll be all day Monday anyhow. The rest fired me for my drinking and padding my expense account. Very narrow-minded individual, I'd say. I was really mad at his wife. Why? Well, she misunderstands and nags.
Yeah.
She likes old Brown.
Old Brown.
And she wants the house put in her name.
Hey, you tie together like an old Brown wanting the house put in her name. It's about time to get a little upset here.
Yeah. The key to this second column, though, is simplicity. If you'll notice that he's only used four or five words to describe the cause. Later on in our fifth step, we can elaborate and discuss those things at length, if we will. But here in the doing the inventory, four, five, six words enough to describe the cause is all we're looking for. Simplicity is the key.
As I filled out the second column, I again began to learn something that's become very valuable to me. I begin to realize, hey, it's not really them I'm upset with. It's what they've done to me that's got me upset. I could take Mr. Brown out of here and put Mr. Green in. I'd be just as upset with Green if he does the same thing Brown did. I can take Miss Jones out of here and put Mrs. Smith in. I'd be just as upset with Smith as I am Jones if she does the same thing. I could take my wife out of here and put my girlfriend in. I'd be just as upset with her if she does the same thing. I begin to realize it's really, really not the people I'm upset with. It's what they've done to me that's got me upset. Now, the reason that has become important for me is later on in this process of recovery, I'm going to be asking people to forgive me for what I've done to them. But at the same time, I'm going to have to forgive people for what they've done to me. And part of the forgiving process starts right here, when I start separating the act from the name. And I begin concentrating on what they did to me rather than who they are. Very valuable information. Now let's look at the third instruction, Joe.
Okay. In most cases, we found that our self-esteem, our support of self, our pocketbook, our security, our ambitions, our personal relationships, including sexual harassment, so we were burned up. We were sore, we were burned up. He repeats it over again. On our grudge list, that's the first column. The list of the name, our interest, second column. Was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambition, our personal relationship, which had been interfered with. Now we don't even have to look at the name this time. Looking on our list of what they did and see what they struck. What did they strike? Whatever they did, what did it hurt? Did it hurt our self-esteem? I'm going to go down this list. His attention to my wife. Well, that threatened the sex relation. Tell my wife about my mistress. That really messed up the sex relation. She cut him off, and then she went and talked to the mistress cut him off, so he ain't got no sex relation. And self-esteem, what do you think happens when everybody in the neighborhood finds out about all this? wasn't really mess his self-esteem up.
You know, here we are living in the neighborhood, and we're going to work every day, and we're paying our taxes like a citizen should, and we're taking care of our families, and we're taking the Boy Scouts out on Saturday afternoon, and we're teaching Sunday school on Sunday morning, and all of a sudden this information about me and my wife and Mr. Brown and my mistress has now become neighborhood gossip. My God, what are people going to think about me now? If you don't think that's a threat to your self-esteem, there's a fellow that lived in Arkansas not too long ago that also lived up there in Washington, D.C.
Billy C., yeah.
If you don't think that's a threat to self-esteem, you ask old Bill. He'll tell you in a hurry what that does for you. It would be absolutely impossible for me to be upset with you unless you threaten one of my basic instincts of life.
Oh, yeah.
If you do anything to threaten my social instinct, my security instinct, my sex instinct, if you do anything to threaten what I've got today, what I'm planning on getting tomorrow, you're going to upset me, you're going to make me mad. So very carefully, just using a few little words, that's why we needed to go back and talk about those basic instincts of life. He used them here, but he never did explain what they were. He explained them later on in the 12 and 12. Very carefully, we go down to the side of each cause, and we put in the part of self that was affected. Maybe for one cause, it's one part of self. Maybe for one cause, it might be all three parts of self at the same time, depending upon what it is. As I filled out the third column, I learned something that has turned out to be, I think, the most valuable thing I've ever learned about me. For the first time in my life, I begin to understand where anger comes from. I've always had a problem with anger. And I always acted and reacted through anger, and I would hurt people. I'd be ashamed of myself, and I'd say, I'll never do that again. I'd turn right around and get angry and hurt them over and over and over and over. You can't do anything about a problem until you understand the problem. And I didn't understand where anger comes from. Today I fully realize that anger comes from a threat to one of my basic instincts of life. And it's how I choose to react to that threat which is going to determine whether I get angry and resentful or not. You know, I found if my relationship with God is right, if my basic instincts are under control, you can say and do about anything you want to me. And you're not going to upset me, you're not going to make me angry, and you're not going to make me resentful. But I've also found that if my relationship with God's not right, and my instincts are out of control, just about anything you say or do to me is going to create that anger and that resentment. Let me give you a good example. I'm married to a lady, many of you know her, her name is Barbara, beautiful red-headed girl. Barbara, if there's ever any such thing as a black belt Al-Anon, she's one of them. She's been in the Al-Anon Fellowship for about 33 years. Got a good program, and I love her deeply. But once in a while, Barbara, like everybody else, gets sick in self. The Al-Anons don't like to say that they do, but they get sick too, just like we do. And sometimes when she's sick in self, she will say or do something to me that threatens one of my basic instincts of life. Now, if my relationship with God's right, my instincts are under control, I find I'm able to say to myself, well, the poor old thing. They're sick just like we are. They can't help it any more than we can. And it'll just slide off of my back, and it won't bother me at all, and the rest of the day is just great. Now, 30 days later, the same woman does the same identical thing. Only this day, my relationship with God's not quite right. My instincts are a little out of kilter, and I react with anger. And I romp, and I stomp, and I raise hell with Barbara and everybody around me all day long. The same lady did exactly the same thing. But I choose to react to it in an entirely different manner based upon my relationship with God and whether my instincts are under control or not. Thank God I've learned that. Because you see, I can't do anything about Barbara. Can't do anything about what she says or what she does. I can't do anything about what any other human on earth does. But I can do something about my reaction to it, based upon my relationship with God and whether my instincts are under control or not. And if I don't have to react with anger and resentment, I'm in much less chance of getting drunk than I was before I learned this particular thing. Very valuable information. Now, we filled out three columns. In the first column, we learned how angry, resentful we really are. How much that blocks us off from God when we saw that list in its entirety. The second column we learn is not them that's got us upset. It's what they've done to us that's got us upset. And the third column we've learned is not even what they've done to us that got us upset. It's how we have chosen to react to what they did to us, which determines whether we're upset or not. Very valuable information. Now that we got the three sheets, or three columns filled out, we've completed the sheet. Now let's see what we're going to do with it.
We're going to do a little inventory, aren't we, Charlie?
Yeah.
Okay.
Before we do see what we're going to do with it, we're going to put about three, maybe four resentments up here on the board from our own inventories. Just to show you how simple this really is.
Glenn likes to write down our inventory for some reason. I don't know why. By the way, if you ever take anybody's inventory, just write it down.
The first name on my list was this lady named Barbara. About 32, 33 years ago, when I was still drinking, I hated this woman with a purple passion. If I could have gotten rid of her without having to do time for it, I certainly would have done it.
Okay.
And I would lay awake at night and I would fantasize. Now, when she goes to work in the morning, and she was always working, I believed in her being self-supporting through her own contributions. I would lay there and think about, now in the morning on the way to work, she's going to get run over by a big, big semi-truck. It's not going to be just any trucking company. It's going to be a very affluent trucking company. And they're going to run over her and kill her. And then I'm going to sue them. And not only am I going to get rid of her, I'm going to make $2 or $3 million out of this deal, too. You Al-Anons are not the only ones that fantasize. We alcoholics did it, too. Second name on my sheet was the Internal Revenue Service. If you wanted to see somebody come unglued, start frothing at the mouth, you just mention the Internal Revenue Service around me. Oh, my God, I hated those people. Joe, who was the first one on your sheet?
Oh, what's her name? Rose.
Oh, Rose. Okay, she first, second, or seventh?
She was my first one.
She was the first one.
I married and divorced her four times.
Joe, who was the first one on your sheet?
My mother-in-law.
Uh-oh.
Who is mother-in-law?
My mother-in-law.
She broke up my marriage.
That's just how simple.
It was so bad. It was awful. She lived in Kentucky. And I'd be having a good day until I seen a car drive by with Kentucky license plates, and I'd think about her. And I got so bad I couldn't even go to Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Boy, that is bad.
That's how simple column one is. You just make a list of the people, institutions, and principles whom you're angry. Now we go back to column two. Why am I so upset with Barbara? What did she do to me? Well, this lady had the audacity. The last year before she came to Al-Anon, she had the audacity to file for divorce on me three times within 1 year. My God, I hated her with a purple passion for that. Why was I so upset with the Internal Revenue Service? Well, they're trying to put me in jail, that's why. I'm really upset with them. Joe, how come you're so upset with old Rose?
She had an affair with another man. After all I'd done to her. I mean, after all I'd done for her. Excuse me.
You're going to get me started, man. Had an affair with another man.
Yeah.
Golly. Joe, how come you so upset with your mother-in-law?
She broke up my marriage.
She broke up his marriage.
Yeah, I was doing a little drinking, but she broke it up.
That's how simple column two is. There might be one cause, there might be multiple causes by each name, but it's a very, very simple process.
Simplicity is the key.
Now let's go to the third column. What part of self is affected? Barbara filing for divorce 3 times within 1 year. Is that a threat to my self-esteem?
Yeah.
You better bet it is.
Thank you.
What are the neighbors going to think about me now? This woman filed for divorce 3 times and I'm still letting her live in my house.
Companionship.
Is it a threat to my personal relationships?
Yeah.
You betcha. She gets a divorce, she'll take the kids. Probably won't have any relationship with them at all. Is it a threat to my security?
Yeah. Oh, boy.
You better bet it is. The time she gets through and I pay all the lawyers and everything else, she'll take everything we've got just sure as anything.
And since she was self-supporting, you might have to go to work, too, John.
Is it a threat to my sex life?
Oh, you like it out.
I don't think she'll let me have any after we get a divorce. Is it a threat to my ambitions, my plans for the future?
Yeah.
You better bet it is. And there may be only one part of self. There may be, by a particular cause, all parts of self might be affected by that one thing. Only you will know what's affected. Internal Revenue Service trying to put me in jail. Is that a threat to my self-esteem?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You betcha it is. What are the neighbors going to think about me now? Is it a threat to my personal relationships?
Yeah.
Sure, my wife and kids are. They can't have much to do with me in jail. Is it a threat to my security?
Yeah.
Well, certainly it is. Yeah. They're going to take everything I've got before they're through with it. Is it a threat to my sex life?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Put a question mark beside it.
Okay. I'm afraid to look. I don't have any idea what he put there.
I told you, Bubba.
You betcha it's a threat to my sex life. At least the kind I'd like to have. But maybe some in there I don't want nothing to do with. Old Rose, having an affair with another man. Is that a threat to Joe's self-esteem?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. My God, he can't even keep his own wife at home. There's something wrong with him, as sure as anything.
Put Charlie over there in column one, please.
Is it a threat to his personal relationships?
Yeah.
Is it a threat to his security?
Yeah.
Well, you betcha. She really has been supporting him. Now he does have to go to work.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that. Is it a threat to his sex life?
Yeah.
Rose probably don't have anything to do with him sexually, based upon what's been going on. Very, very simple, very easy to fill this out. Mm-hmm. Joe's resentment against his mother-in-law for breaking up his marriage. Is that a threat to his self-esteem?
She wiped out everything.
Yeah. Is it a threat to his personal relationship?
Yeah.
Is it a threat to his security?
Yeah.
Is it a threat to his sex life?
Yeah.
You betcha. Now, that's how simple it is to fill these three columns out. Now, we've been talking about filling these three columns out here for about 20 minutes. Well, anybody could go home and fill out these three columns in just 2 or 3 hours. It certainly does not take days and days and weeks and months. Just a matter of an hour or two, you could fill this sheet out. Now, after we filled it out, now let's see what we're going to do with this information. Joe?
See, we went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. The first thing apparent was that this world and its people were often quite wrong. Well, I always knew that. mm-hmm. haven't learned anything yet. Mm-hmm. To conclude that others were wrong as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse and then we were sore ourselves. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victory only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. Now, it's plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile?
And I read that last statement, and I stopped. And I tried to look back in my life and see how much time I've wasted and squandered in resentments. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I know about me. And when I've got a good resentment churning around up here in my head, I'm pretty well paralyzed from doing anything worthwhile. All I want to do is sit there and play that thing over and over and over and over and over. And one of my favorite things that I used to do when I was drinking, I'd get up early in the morning, have a drink of whiskey and a cup of coffee, and turn on my resentment replay machine. And replay what she did to me yesterday. Replay what he did to me last week. Replay what that damn neighbor said to me a month ago. Replay what that damn policeman did to me a year ago. Replay what that damn boss did to me 5 years ago. Replay what my daddy did to me 10 years ago. Replay, 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 replay. And it took me just about an hour to run through that tape. And my God, I loved every minute of it. And when that tape would run out, I'd have another drink of whiskey and another cup of coffee, and I would turn on my get-even machine. Now, by God, the next time she does that, I'm going to do this, she's going to say that, and wacko, I'm going to put it there. They're not going to treat me that way. And it took me just about an hour to run through that get-even tape every morning, and I loved every moment of it. When I came into AA, I found the only difference is I'm not taking a drink of whiskey. I'm still getting up in the morning to have a cup of coffee and turn on my resentment replay machine. Another cup of coffee and turn on my get-even machine. I have spent literally thousands and thousands and thousands of hours in resentments. And as I look back at them today, I don't see whether they've ever done me any good whatsoever. They certainly did not make me any money. They certainly never made me feel better. They only made me feel worse. They certainly never straightened up a relationship with another human being. It only caused them to get worse and worse and worse. And as far as I can tell, it is absolute, complete, wasted time. Now, the first time in my life, not only am I sober, but I'm peaceful and I'm happy and I'm free. I didn't know you could be sober and feel as good as I feel today. I love every moment of life that comes along. Now, I'm beginning to approach the end of mine. I certainly do not intend to waste any more of the hours that I've got left in resenting and getting even with other people. I have found a way to live without having to do that. Where I can be peaceful and happy and free for the rest of my life if I wish to. I'm not going to waste any more of it, what little I've got left, in these damn resentments. That's one of the worst things about a resentment. It blocks you off from God. It blocks you off from your fellow man. It blocks you off from yourself. It does you no good whatsoever. And it is absolute, complete, wasted time. All of us have an allotted time we're going to live here. And it's our choice as to whether we're going to waste it in resentments or not waste it in resentments. I choose not to. And that's one of the bad things about a resentment is the waste of time. But that's not the worst thing. Here's the worst thing about a resentment.
With the alcoholic whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal. For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the Spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns when we drink again. And with us, to drink is to die.
That's the worst thing about a resentment. When we've got a resentment churning around in our head, we don't feel good. we're completely blocked off from God. And if we don't feel good, we're going to be that way just so long. And then our mind is going to start searching for something to make it feel better. And we're going to start remembering that sense of ease and comfort that comes at once by taking a couple of drinks. Next thing you know, we've convinced ourselves it's okay to drink. Insanity returns, and we end up drunk all over again. And with us, to drink is to die. I've seen more people get drunk in AA over resentments than I have any other thing, period. It seems as though it blocks them off from God. It blocks them off from their fellow man. They have no good feelings whatsoever. And eventually they go right back to drinking again. And that's the worst thing about a resentment. Now listen to what the book says. If we were to live, we had to be free of anger. It's not suggested that we be free of anger. It said we had to be free of anger. The grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. They may be the dubious luxury of normal men, but for alcoholics, these things are poison. We turn back to the list. See, this is why you've got to have a written inventory. If you didn't have a written inventory, you wouldn't have a list to turn back to. We turned back to the list, for it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. Always before, I looked at it to see what those suckers had done to me. Today, I look at it to see what those resentments are doing to me. And if they're going to cause me to get drunk, then I'm looking at them from an entirely different angle than I used to. We begin to see that the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had power to actually kill. And I read that and I stopped. And I said, man, how stupid can you be? All my life, I've been proud of the fact that I stand on my own two feet. Nobody tells me what to do. I don't need your advice, thank you. And I suddenly realized that other people, through my resentments toward them, have controlled and ruled and dominated my life as far back as I can remember. If they've controlled and dominated and ruled the way I think, they've controlled and ruled the way I act, they've controlled and ruled my life for me entirely, I have given them the power to actually kill me. Now, I made a decision in step three to let God direct my thinking and let God direct my life. And if those people do it, through my resentments toward them, God can't, and it's just that simple. And suddenly I said, man, you really are dumb. Because some of these people have been dead and buried in the graveyard for years. Been reaching out from the grave, and they've had me with a yang-yang as far back as I can remember. And when I saw that, I said, to hell with those people. I'm not going to let those people live in my head rent-free any longer. I've made a decision to let God direct my thinking, and if they direct it, alive or dead, God can't, and it's just that simple. And when I saw that, an amazing thing happened to me. You know, we alcoholics fancy ourselves as reasonably intelligent people. And I think we are. I don't think we're smarter than others, but I think we're reasonably intelligent people. We don't like to look dumb. And when I saw what I'd been letting people do to me through my resentments toward them, that began to look dumb as hell. And about 95% of these resentments automatically began to disappear when I saw how stupid it really was to let people control me that way. Now, if you're like I am, though, there's probably going to be two, three, four, or five of them that have been embedded in your mind so long and so deeply that seeing the stupidity behind them will not get rid of them. So what are we going to do about those resentments that are so deep-seated and so deep-rooted that we have difficulty in getting rid of them, Joe?
We realize that the people who wronged us will have spiritually sick. Though we did not like this happening the way they disturbed us, they like ourselves were sick people, sick too.
We're up on the top of page 67 now.
Okay. We ask God, we have prayer. We ask God to show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, this is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done. You know, one of the objects of resentment is love. And we got a shortcoming on that, but we're pretty short of love, but we got to learn to love the people. And the greatest form of love, concern for another person, is to pray for his welfare. That's the greatest way we humans could show concern for another human, is to pray for him. And there's no way that you can pray for a person and hate him at the same time. One will remove the other. So we have any of those deep-seated resentments. We can pray for them people and get rid of and overcome that resentment. This is the ultimate two. We got an illustration in the back. Am I going to read that?
Yeah, sure.
Was it 551? Of how a woman used that.
It's a perfect example of how to use prayer to get rid of those deep, deep-seated resentments. Page 551, third paragraph.
She said, I've had many spiritual experiences since I've been in the program, many that I didn't recognize right away. For I'm slow to learn and they take many guises. But one was so outstanding I like to pass it on whenever I can in the hope they will help someone else as it helped me. As I said earlier, self-pity and resentment were my constant companions, and my inventory began to look like a 33-year diary, for I seemed to have a resentment against everybody I'd ever known. All but one responded to the treatment suggested in steps immediately, and this one posed a problem.
All the resentments she had, when she saw how stupid they really were, they all disappeared except one, and this particular one creates a real problem for her.
It was against my mother and was 25 years old. I had fanned it and nurtured it as one might a delicate child, and it had become as much a part of me as my breathing. It had provided me with my excuses of lack of education, my marital failures, personal failures, inadequacies, and of course my alcoholism. And though I thought I had been willing to part with it, now I knew I was reluctant to let it go. One morning, however, I realized I had to get rid of it, for my reprieve was running out. And if I didn't get rid of it, I was going to get drunk. And I didn't want to get drunk anymore. In my prayers that morning, I asked God to point out to me some way to be free of this resentment. During the day, a friend of mine brought me some magazines to take to the hospital group I was interested in. And I looked through them, and a banner across the front of one featured an article by a prominent clergyman in which he caught the word resentment. And I'll never forget when I was introduced to this idea. You know, I was sober not more than 2 months, and I went to a little conference down in Oklahoma.
Apache,
Oklahoma. You can't get to Apache from here. No way. A little big town. But I met a lady there. Her name was Alabama Carruthers, and some of y'all may have heard of Alabama. She's dead now, but she loved Alcoholics Anonymous. Man, she liked Willie. She just loved Alcoholics Anonymous. And she talked that night, and she said two things that just went off like a thunderbolt in my head. And one of them, she said that she had a soul sickness. I said, yeah, that's what I had. That was what I had, a soul sickness. I was finally able to put a word to this feeling that I'd been carrying around, a soul sickness. And she said another thing that night that really got to me. She said, I've got peace of mind tonight. Off in my head again, I said, my God, to myself, that's all I've ever wanted was a peace of mind. That's all I've ever wanted was a peace of mind. And several years prior to this, when I was drinking, I used to drink and go places. And I didn't come home right away either. And this one time, I'd been gone about 3 months. Well, that's what I did. And when I did come home, I just come home like I'd been down to the corner grocery store to get a loaf of bread. And I was sitting on a bar stool there at the Zebra Lounge. And I can almost smell that baby now. And I got to thinking. Now, you all know either drink or think, but I got to drinking and thinking. And I thought, well, old Rose hadn't seen me in about 3 months. I guess I'll go to the house and visit. Y'all know what I mean by visit, don't you? So I went over to my house.
You know she's lonely.
Yeah, she was lonely. I knew she was. If you hadn't seen me in 3 months, you'd be lonely, wouldn't you? So I went over there, and I knocked on the door, and she kind of peeked out the... Well, what I did, I just broke in. Okay. And I got in my living room, and there sat an old boy in my recliner watching my TV in my house with my wife, and I'm making payments on all that. Well, what are you going to do? Well, I did. I jumped on that old boy, and he liked to beat me to death in my own living room floor. And put me out in the yard and told me not to come back. And boy, I used that for a long, long time. Laid awake nights thinking, my mind raced uncontrollably, as Bill said. And I carried that kind of attitude into my next marriage. Well, my wife had an attitude or some problem like that, and she brought her attitude into our marriage. And we had nothing but trouble. Zero. And no wonder I was resentful the time I got here. But anyhow, about 3 o'clock in the morning there at the lobby of that hotel, it was Alabama and George, my little friend George, was laying over in her lap asleep. And you think about that. Alabama Carruthers, my friend George. And I was able to talk to her a little bit. And I began to ask her, I said, Alabama, you said you have peace of mind. And I, how did you get peace of mind? And she said, well, Joe, tell me what's going on in your mind. And I told her I was going to get even with those people and what they've done and all that. And she said, well, I said, is there any solution? She said, you're full of resentments. That's what she said. And I said, what are the resentments? She said, oh, resentments, old angers and old hurts that are refelt over and over and over. You make yourself sick and blame it on them. I said, is there any solution for that? And she said, yes, there is. And she had a purse that was about that big. And she dug down in that purse. You know how they are. And she dug down in that purse, and she, I don't think she was ever going to find this what she's looking for, but it was one of these big books. And she came out of there with it, and she said, Joe, if you'll read this and do what this says, she said, it helped me, and it might help you. So here's what I said. It said here, he said, in effect, if you have a resentment you want to be free of, if you will pray for the person or thing that you resent, you will be free. If you will ask in prayer for everything you want for yourself to be given to them, you will be free. Ask for their health, their prosperity, their happiness, and you will be free. Even when you don't really want it for them and your prayers are only words and you don't mean it, go ahead and do it anyway. Do it every day for 2 weeks and you'll find you've come to mean it and want it for them. And you will realize that where you used to feel bitterness, resentment, and hatred, you now feel compassion, understanding, and love. I went back home after that conference that Sunday night, got in the bed, my old mind started running again, and I said, I think I'll pray for those people. So I prayed for them. And the next day, I woke up and I said, I think I'll pray for those people. And I began to add some people to my list as I was doing this. And during the day, I would pray for those people. And the time went by. I don't know if it was 2 weeks, 3 weeks, or what. But I continued to pray. Sometimes I'd be driving down the street praying out loud. You know, I think probably some of the people who were driving by me thought I was crazy. Well, I was, but I didn't know it. But anyhow, I continued to pray. And I'll never forget this. One morning, one of those beautiful spring mornings that we love in the Midwest, I got stuck in the stoplight, just the length of a stoplight. And I looked at this beautiful house that was sitting over there, and the tulips were in full bloom, red and yellow. They were just gorgeous, just vivid with color. And the grass was so green, I couldn't believe how green that grass was. The birds were singing, the squirrels were jumping around the trees, and I thought to myself, God, it's a beautiful morning. It is a beautiful morning. And then the thought came to me, well, Joe, how long has it been since you've seen those things? Do you know what? I don't believe I'd ever seen color until that morning. I think I've been seeing in black and white for many, many years. When this book talks about being cut off from the Spirit, I know what that means. I really do know what that means. As Joe said, the way that you get even with people, and that's all I ever want to do is get even with them. The way you get even with them, you pray for them. That's the way you get even. And I've learned that love is forgiving and is also forgiving. You see, don't ever want to go back into that again. Thank you.
Let me tell you something. If you've got a resentment and you don't want to get rid of it, for God's sake, don't pray about it. Because if you do, you're going to lose it. I speak from experience. I got into this particular part of the inventory, and I had one resentment that I wasn't going to tell anybody about, period. It's one of those take it to the grave kind. I had no intention of ever getting rid of this resentment. But I was working myself through the steps, and this thing began to bother me. And I went to my sponsor and I told him about it, and he said, "Oh, Charlie, you've got to get rid of that resentment." I said, "I don't want to get rid of this resentment." He said, "That's beside the point. If you don't get rid of it, you're going to get drunk over it sooner or later." And in my usual smart mouth manner, I said, "Okay, how in the hell do I get rid of it?" And he took me to this example in the back of the book. He said, "Read this, go home, get down on your knees, and pray for this guy, and you'll get rid of that resentment." So I read this little thing that Joe just read. I went home, got down on my knees, which I very seldom did in those days. And I said, "God, I want you to give that son of a bitch everything he deserves." And that's the only prayer I had for him that day. The next day I prayed again. The next day I prayed again. And 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 days later, I don't really know how long it was, I found myself something I really didn't intend to say. I found myself saying, "God, give him in his life what I want for my own. Give him the same peace of mind, serenity, happiness, prosperity that I seek for myself." And 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 days later, and I don't really know how long, I woke up one morning and that resentment was gone. And has never returned from that date on. And the irony in this whole situation is, it wasn't 30 days later and that guy moved in as my next door neighbor. This thing really does work. Like Joe says, prayer for the benefit of another human being is one of the greatest expressions of love that one human being can have for another.
Can't heal a sick mind with a sick mind.
Love and hate cannot exist on the same plane. As you pray for another human being, eventually, love will replace the resentment. And you won't even know what had happened to you. You'll just wake up some morning and, by golly, it's not there any longer. Now just think. If 95% of these resentments automatically disappear because they look so stupid when we see the truth behind them, if the other 5% can be removed through prayer, then that means that this display case up here in my head, my little store, the damaged and unsaleable goods called resentments, has now been emptied out. And when that happens, there's another natural law that applies. And that law says nature abhors a vacuum. No such thing as a vacuum or a void. There's always something rushing in to fill it up. If those resentments disappear, they're going to have to be replaced with something else. God's not going to leave another hole in my head. I've got enough of those already. And the only thing that can replace them will be the opposite of the resentments. Where my mind used to be filled with resentments, today it's filled with love, patience, tolerance, compassion, and goodwill toward my fellow man. That's God's thinking. God's thinking has replaced my thinking, which was the resentment in the first place. And to my amazement, I realized that I didn't have to read any other books to find love, patience, tolerance, compassion, and goodwill. I didn't have to go to any other fellowships. If God dwells within me, and my book says He does, then those things have always been a part of my makeup. But you see, I never could use them before. Because in my chase for money, power, prestige, sex, and what I thought were the good things of life, those things had to be repressed to let me operate on the level that I wanted to operate on. But now that the resentments are gone, they automatically come to the surface. A very, very positive happening. A very positive happening. Resentments have been replaced with love, patience, tolerance, compassion, and goodwill. A third of my store has now been straightened up. I'm in much less chance of drinking now than I was before I started the inventory process. It would do me no good to get rid of those resentments if I didn't know how to keep them from coming back. Because the world's full of sick people. And they're going to do it to me again tomorrow. If I'm not careful, I'll resent them for doing so. And I don't seem to be able to have just one resentment. When I get one, the next thing you know, I've got two, and then I've got four, and then I've got 8, and then I've got 16, and then I've got 32, and I'm an absolute basket case again. So I have to do one more thing before I can leave the resentments. I want to have to see how to keep them from coming back. So let's go back over to the chapter dealing with these resentments. Let's go to page 67. Let's go down to the middle of the page. And it says, referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others have done, we resolutely look for our own mistakes. Now, we've never done this before. We've always looked to see what those suckers have done to us. Never have we looked to see what we really did to them. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly. And we're willing to set these matters straight. So now then, let's unfold the last two columns on your inventory sheet. And if you'll notice, column 4 is headed up with the wording, what did I do? Putting out of mind the wrongs others have done, I resolutely look for my own mistakes. What did I do, if anything, to set in motion trains of circumstances, which in turn caused people or institutions to hurt me, and eventually led to my resentment of them for doing so? So I went to column 4. And I looked at that name, Barbara, on that sheet in column 1. I said, okay, Charlie, now you forget what Barbara did to you. You forget those 3 divorces. What did you do, if anything, to set this thing in motion? And it took me just about 5 seconds to say, well, if I hadn't been out there screwing around, Joe calls it committing adultery. I call it screwing around.
I don't talk that way.
If I hadn't been out there screwing around, I wouldn't have got caught. And if I hadn't got caught, she probably wouldn't have filed for divorce in the first place. It took me about another 5 seconds to say, if I hadn't been sneaking around behind her back, lying to her all the time, she probably wouldn't have filed for divorce in the first place. Just another few seconds, and I said, if I hadn't been blowing all of our money on what I thought was so important, disregarding the welfare of my wife and children, she probably wouldn't have filed for divorce in the first place. And I thought, my God, Charlie, have you got any other resentments like this? Have you conned yourself into believing that it's their fault in order to not have to look at yourself? And I suddenly realized why I loved my resentment so well. Because you see, every time I played a resentment over, I distorted the picture just a little bit. I made what they did just a little bit worse. And I made what I did just a little bit less. And you let me play it long enough, I can convince myself that I had nothing to do with it. And it was all their damn fault in the first place. If you're a practicing alcoholic, you've got to develop these kind of skills. I don't think you and I could live with ourselves when we're out there doing our thing if we have to honestly see what's going on in our lives. But you see, we don't ever have to see that. Because we've got this convenient little thing called resentments. Play them over and over. Distort the picture every time. Eventually transfer all blame to them and make ourselves as pure as the driven snow. And then we can go right on living the kind of life we're wanting to live. And we men go from woman to woman to woman. And you ladies go from man to man to man. And we go from job to job to job. We go from city to city to city. And we go from state to state to state. And we go from country to country, and it's always their damn fault. I don't think we could live with ourselves if we didn't have that ability. So I said, Charlie, have you got any more on here like this? I looked at the Internal Revenue Service. I said, forget the fact that they're trying to put you in jail. What did you do to set this thing in motion, if anything? I said, well, that's very simple. I'm cheating on my income tax and they caught me. Yeah. Joe, what did you do, if anything, to set in motion this deal with you and Rome?
Well, I was out there doing adultery, Charlie. I wasn't screwing around.
Okay.
Spending money I didn't have, trying to impress people I didn't like. But primarily, I got drunk one time. I woke up and I was married. And I didn't intend to do that. But I did. And that's why I would leave and not come home. I didn't care. Uncaring person. I just didn't care. Finally, I confronted her with that one night. And she said, well, Joe, you're the one who insisted on us getting married. And it turned out it was my fault. But I didn't know that. But that's the kind of person I was. She's really a great gal. She's a fine person. She really is. As I was just drunk and sick. Couldn't do anything better. I always left and came back. Because, see, I didn't know how to come back. I didn't know how to stay gone. I mean, I just didn't know how to stay gone. I come back. Now, there's a whole other story behind that, which I don't have time to tell you, but that's what I did. I would leave and stay gone, but I'd come back.
Joe, what did you do, if anything, to set in this motion, this deal with you and your mother-in-law?
I didn't do nothing to her.
That's the way it looked. I realized that I hadn't done nothing. It didn't take very long to look and say, what did you do to her? And I realized I had never really done anything to her specifically. But what I had done to her daughter and her grandkids threatened her in the worst way. Well, that was the closest thing in her life. And she retaliated to protect them like any decent person should have done. And I resented her. I resented her because I could not admit to what I was doing. I was not going to take any blame for that, and I used my mother-in-law as a scapegoat. But once I put it down in the inventory and saw that it all started with me, you know, that I was the root of the problem, then I didn't need to hold my mother-in-law hostage no more. I didn't need an excuse. I saw my part in the whole thing. I really didn't think I'd know I was using her to escape and end up trapping myself. Like sleeping dirt on the rug.
As I went down through my list of resentments, carefully checking each one to see what I had done to set that in motion, I never found a resentment, period, that I myself hadn't done something to set it in motion. And they had retaliated against me, and I had resented them for doing so. I never had a policeman put me in jail for sober driving. I never had a woman drag me through a divorce court for being a good husband and a good father. I never had anybody beat the hell out of me for keeping my mouth shut. Always, I started it. And I simply did not know that. And I don't think any of us will ever realize. And nearly all the resentments we have sometime in the past made a decision based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. And it's really not their fault. It's our fault to begin with. Absolutely, completely amazing information when we fill out column 4. Now then we look at column 5. Where I've been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, frightened, or inconsiderate. Which of the above character defects caused me to do what I did, or caused me to want to hold on to the old resentment, even though I may have done nothing to cause it? I went back to Barbara's name. I went back to see the things that I had done to create the problems. And I said to myself, Charlie, were you selfish?
Yeah.
You better bet I was. I wasn't concerned with anybody but me. Selfish and self-centered to the extreme. I said, Charlie, were you dishonest?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Sneaking around behind her back, lying to her all the time. Not only her, but everybody else that I was acquainted with, period. I said, were you self-seeking and frightened? I said, oh, yeah. Now I'm getting close to 40 years old. And I made up my mind that if I don't get out there and get some of that stuff now, it'll soon be too late for me to do so. Fear drives us to do things that end up hurting other people in many, many cases. I said, Charlie, were you inconsiderate? And I said, you better bet I was. If I'd been considering my wife and my children and put their needs and wants ahead of my own, I wouldn't have been doing that kind of stuff in the first place. And for the first time, I began to see the kind of character I had become, the kind of personality that I had developed through my years of living, practicing alcoholism, and running my life on self-will. I began to see where I had become a very selfish human being, a very dishonest, self-seeking, frightened, and inconsiderate human being. I always thought I was a pretty good guy. I just drank a little too much. But when I really began to look into that fifth column and began to see the type of character I had become, it made me sick to see that I'm the cause of all these things. And all my actions stem from that kind of personality. And for the first time, I began to realize if I don't do something about that, I'm going to keep right on doing the same old things over and over and over and over and over. If I stay selfish, if I stay dishonest, self-seeking, frightened, and inconsiderate, I'm going to keep right on hurting people and institutions. They're going to retaliate. I'm going to resent. And eventually, I'm going to get drunk over it. But just think, if I could become a little less selfish, don't have to get perfect, I never will. But if I could become a little less selfish, maybe I wouldn't be hurting so many people. If I could become a little less dishonest, maybe I wouldn't be lying and cheating and stealing and being scared to death what they're going to do whenever they catch me. If I could become a little less self-seeking and frightened, then I wouldn't have to do some of those things that hurt other people. If I could become a little less inconsiderate and starting putting other people's needs and wants and desires ahead of my own, just maybe I could start getting along with people. But you can bet your boots if I don't. If I stay selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, frightened, and inconsiderate, then I don't stand a chance. Because I'll do the same old things I've always done. Keep right on hurting people and institutions. And eventually I'm going to get drunk over it. Now just think what we've really accomplished here as we filled out these five columns on this sheet. We're doing step four. This is the resentment part of the inventory. So we put a little four up there at the top of the page. Out there in that fifth column, I now see the exact nature of the wrong I'm going to talk to another human being about when I take step five. The wrong is the resentment. That's what blocks me off from God. But what is the exact nature of it? What's at the core of it? What's the inherent characteristic of it? And it's always based upon my selfishness, dishonesty, self-seeking, frightened, or inconsiderate. So that's what we're going to talk about in step five. You know, when a guy comes to me with his step four to take step five, I don't care how many times he's stolen. I don't care whether he's stolen twice or 200. What I'm interested in is what's within him that causes him to do this in the first place. Is he selfish? Is he dishonest? What part of his character causes this? That's what we're going to have to work on. I don't care how many times he's committed adultery, whether he's done it once or 1,000 times. What I'm concerned with is what's within him that causes that. That's what we've got to work on. That's the exact nature of the wrong. This is not a list of dirty, filthy, nasty items. Sure, we're going to talk about those things. But that's not what we're concentrating on. We're concentrating on what's within our personality that causes these things. Out there in that fifth column, I now see the character defects that I'm going to become willing to turn loose of in step six. Knowing full well that if I'm not willing to turn loose of them, I'll never change. And if I never change, I'll never get any better. Out there in that fifth column, I now see the shortcomings I'm going to ask God to take away in step seven. And hopefully, with God's help and all the strength I could muster, we begin to change some of those things. And my personality begins to undergo a change too. Over there in the first column, in my case, every name in the first column. In your case, some of them. But in my case, every one of them is somebody, an institution, or a person that I've harmed. And they're going to come off of this list and be added to a sheet to be used later on for steps 8 and 9. The book says when we get to 8 and 9, we've got the list, we made it when we took step 4. And part of the list comes off of this resentment sheet. So if I've done this step 4 resentment-wise the way the big book says, I now have all the information I need for steps 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9 resentment-wise. Now let me ask you something. Did we do anything to be afraid of? Did we do anything that was too complicated? A very simple procedure.
Did we write down anything of dirty, filthy, nasty things? No. An immoral inventory? No. We simply did what the book said. We saw the facts. We faced the facts. And we're going to enter into a process so we can accept the facts. That's all.
Now, one more thing, and then we're through. And sometimes I upset people when I say this, but that's okay. I don't mind. I've been sober long enough, it really doesn't bother me that much anymore. If you've got a resentment that you don't want to get rid of, knowing full well now that it might get you drunk, and you don't want to get rid of it, for God's sake, let's put it down on this sheet of paper. And let's look at the truth behind it. You know, I hear some of you saying, and I hear awful good.
Charlie does hear good.
Mm. Charlie, that thing you're talking about will probably work on resentments where I've done something to them. But how about those that did it to me, and I didn't have anything to do with that. I didn't set it in motion. How about those that hurt us as kids growing up? How about the sexual abuse, the mental abuse, the physical abuse? I've heard all the time I've been in AA about the sexual abuse you ladies undergo, and certainly many of you have. But also, men undergo sexual abuse too. I've taken lots of fifth steps. Almost invariably in every one of them, there's some of that stuff that comes up in our inventories too. How about those that hurt us that way? And we didn't have anything to do with that. Aren't we justified in having that kind of resentment? I guess we are if we want to get drunk over it. But a justified resentment will get you drunk just as fast as an unjustified resentment will. A justified resentment blocks you off from the sunlight of the Spirit. And God can't direct your thinking. Because whatever you're resenting is directing your thinking. And God can't. And if we've got one of those and we don't want to get rid of it, let's put it on this sheet. Let's put down who it was. Let's put down what they did to us. Let's put down the part of self that was affected. Let's put down the part that we played, in this case, nothing. But then let's look in the fifth column. Are we using that resentment for some selfish purpose? Are we so dishonest with ourselves we refuse to see the truth behind it? If you've got a resentment in your head today, and I don't care what it is, it's not truth. Oh, yeah, it started with truth. Oh, yeah, it's partially truth. But if you've played it over and over and over and over and over, you've distorted it, and it's no longer the absolute truth. Only God knows the truth. We human beings know the truth as we perceive it to be. And our perception behind many of these kind of resentments is no longer truth. Are we honestly looking at it and seeing the truth behind it? Are we so afraid of facing life without that resentment that we're afraid to turn it loose? You know, one of the greatest excuses in the world is, I could have done that. if they hadn't have done that to me. I could be that if they hadn't done that to me. The lady in the book used this resentment against her mother to rationalize and justify her lack of education. After all, if Mama hadn't have done that to her, she could get an educable. She could have gotten an education if she wanted to bad enough, regardless of what Mama did. She used that resentment against her mother to justify her marital failure. Bull. Mama didn't have anything to do with her marital failure. She used that resentment against her mother to justify her alcoholism. Bull. Mama didn't make her alcoholic. I tell you why she became alcoholic. She kept on drinking whiskey. And she became an alcoholic. Mama had nothing to do with that.
Mama didn't make her whiskey.
You see, if we've got one of those kind of resentments, we are so used to using that resentment to justify not doing what we should do, or just as important to justify doing things we shouldn't do, that sometimes we're simply afraid to face life without that thing. We better look at that closely. Are we so inconsiderate of another human being that we fail to recognize that people that do those things to us, they're not necessarily bad people, they're sick people. They did it to us out of sickness rather than badness. They didn't necessarily do it to us anyhow. They would have done it to anybody under those circumstances. If we can even begin to think about that, maybe we could start straightening out a relationship with another human being before it's too late. At the very least, what we can do with those resentments and try to forgive another human being, we can keep them from controlling our lives. It doesn't make any sense to let them hurt us 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 years ago and let them hurt us every day for the rest of our life. As long as we're carrying the resentment, they've got us, they're controlling us, they're directing our thinking, God can't, they can, and it's just that simple. And if you honestly look at those kind of resentments, you get rid of them too. And if nothing else works, the final thing is, by God, pray for them. And oh, that's hard to do. It is hard to do to pray for somebody that's hurt you and you didn't have anything to do with it. Now, that doesn't mean if we pray for them, it doesn't mean that we're going to have to like them in the future. It doesn't mean we're going to walk hand in hand with them the rest of our life. What it does mean is we're tired of letting other people make us sick. And we can get rid of those resentments too if we pray for those people. In other words, we can become resentment-free to the level that God intends for us to be. We'll never be entirely free of resentments, because they do serve a useful purpose if they are used in the right way. Shall we give an example of the right use of a resentment, please?
Yeah, this is a natural ability. All this is God-given. This is why we're not going to get rid of anything. In our book, it talks about a scheme of rearrangements and adjustments, moving things around, putting them back where they belong, and then having a problem to keep them in place. You know, it's not by chance that we have, we are competitive people. When someone does something constructive, successfully, it threatens my self-esteem. After all, that guy got out there and did that. Now, if it threatens my self-esteem and if that makes me get up and motivates me to use my intelligence to complete a task, then that means my health of resentment, I resented what he did, so I got up and did something constructive, and mankind as a whole is better off as a result of that. Because remember when the situation back in the 70s, I think it was, 60s, the Russians shot up the Sputnik. Woke up one morning, that damn thing was going round and round and round. We resented the hell out of that, them doing that.
Made us madder than hell.
Yeah. And we said, we're going to beat them, we're going to the moon. Well, we never would have attempted what we had if we not hadn't reacted to them. So, but resentments are necessary, and they're natural, and they're God-given. But it's how we use them, because of self, they get out of control in our lives and destroy us. And like I use the one about the guy in the neighborhood that I live in my neighborhood, and these houses need some work on. They don't look too good. Some of the windows broke out. Some of the houses need painting. But most of us been around there tonight. All right with us. We sit around every day and rock on the front porch. And we enjoying our neighborhood. One day a new guy moves into the house across the street. He starts painting his house and putting in window paint. We resent the hell out of that guy. Who was that? Who in the hell is he moving in here messing up his neighborhood? So we look at our houses. We never have looked at them until he moved in. And we look at our house and we said, we'll fix it. So I fix up my house a little bit. And next door neighbor sees me fixing up my house. He fixed up his house. And pretty soon, God got the whole place cleaned up. So that's a healthy resentment. The alcoholic don't operate that way. He just sits on his porch every day and rocks. Don't do nothing. One night he'd go over and burn that guy's house. It's the way we use it. We're going to find a better way. And I'll make a change. You know? So we're always going to be competitive. We are highly competitive people. And that's good. I think sometimes, you know, God gave us the ability to live highly. I think the alcoholic is going to be sometimes in recovery, he's going to be highly successful or a complete failure. We never can find that medium. There's no medium for us. It's either one or the other.
Thank you all for being here. We hope you've enjoyed it. We certainly have.
Four, five, six, and seven for the big book. Joe, and Charlie. Welcome them.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Charlie Farman. I'm a very grateful recovering alcoholic. Because I'm a member of the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. By the grace of the power that I found through the 12-step program of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Can't hear you.
We don't have the power on yet. Can you hear me now?
Yeah. Lack of power is our dilemma.
That's my dilemma.
That's our dilemma.
Can you hear me now? All right.
Okay.
I was saying that because I'm a member of the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, by the grace of the power that I found through the 12-step program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I haven't found it necessary to take a drink for 11,518 days today, one day at a time. For this, I'm very grateful. We're going to try to move right on into this thing this morning. We're going to briefly review the resentment thing, and then we're going to go right on in with the rest of step four. Joe, you got anything you want to bring up here?
No, my name is Joe, and I don't look like it, but I'm an alcoholic. And it's truly by God's grace and the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that I found in a book called Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm sober this morning, and for that I'm very, very thankful. Have anybody in here had any mustard greens besides Joe and I?
Oh, yeah.
Well, you won't understand this story unless you had some. But there was this traveling salesman, and he broke down, and he saw this house way over there, so he walked over and knocked on the door. Said, my car broke down out here. Could I spend the night? The farmer said, yeah, but we don't have a daughter. He said, well, it's okay. I'll spend the night anyhow. So come on in. We're about to have dinner. So they went in and sat down there about to have dinner. And there was one great big bowl of mustard greens sitting there. And God, this guy liked those mustard greens. And he picked them up and eating them. And the farmer said, hey, fella, if you don't be careful, we won't have anything left for breakfast. That's all we got. Poor. So they went to bed, and after a while, there was a noise down at the barn, and the farmer had to get up and go down to the barn to check out that thing. And this guy's wife, the farmer's wife, said, all right, now's your chance. He jumped up and ran in and ate the rest of the mustard greens. He liked mustard greens. That's terrible.
Joe?
My name is Joe, and I'm a real alcoholic. Through God's grace, because this program works one day at a time in my life. I haven't found it necessary to take a drink since the 10th of March, 1962. For this, I'm extremely grateful, and a lot of other people are grateful.
Especially
especially Lou Bell.
We followed a little procedure yesterday in taking a look at our resentments, and basically we're going to use that same procedure as we go on through the rest of our four-step inventory. And remember, we had that sheet laid out with the five columns in it, and we looked at the first three columns first. And we said it was nothing new, not bringing anything new into AA. It was simply page 65 in the blank form. We recommended that if we fill those columns out, rather than go from left to right, that we do them one column at a time. And we found in the first column, we listed who and what we are resentful at, and what we're angry with. And for most of us, as we filled out the first column, for the first time in our lives, we really realized how many resentments we really do have. We didn't think we had very many till we started putting them on paper. And as we begin to see how many resentments we really do have, we begin to see that it'd be impossible for God to direct our will, our thinking, as long as we had that many resentments. Because whoever we're resenting and everything, they control our thinking, and if they do, then God can't. We learned that simply from filling out column one. Column two, we put down the cause of the resentment. Whatever it was that they did to us, that causes us to resent them. We found in column two, we begin to realize it's really not them we resent. It's what they've done to us that's got us upset and got us angry and got us resentful. We said that was very important information because later on, we're going to have to start forgiving people for what they've done to us. We're going to ask them to forgive us for what we've done to them, and certainly we're going to have to forgive them also. And part of the forgiving process starts right here in column two, when we begin to concentrate more on what they've done rather than who they are. Very valuable information. We filled out the third column. We found it would be impossible for us to be upset with another human being unless they have done something to threaten one of our basic instincts of life. You threaten our social instinct, our security instinct, our sex instinct, automatically we begin to be angry and we begin to resent them for doing so. As we fill out the third column, we also begin to realize where anger really does come from. Most of us have had a lot of trouble with anger in the past, tried to control it and couldn't do it. And one of the reasons we couldn't control it is simply we didn't know where it came from. And you can't solve a problem until you understand the problem. For the first time in column three, we begin to see where our anger comes from, a threat to one of our basic instincts of life. That's how we react to that. We also found that if our basic instincts of life are under control, if our relationship with God is okay, then we don't have to react with anger. But it really doesn't make any difference who it is and what they do to us. If our instincts aren't under control, if our relationship with God is not right, we're going to react with anger almost every time. So we simply begin to see that maybe we have a choice in this anger thing.